broadcasting live from atop the Rocky Mountains, the crossroads of the West. You are listening to the Liberty Roundtable Radio Talk Show.
All right, happy to have you along, my fellow Americans. Sam Bushman and Kurt Crosby live on your radio. Hard-hitting news that networks refuse to use, no doubt, continues now. This is the broadcast for April 2nd, hour 2 of 2. And our goal always to protect life, liberty, and property and to promote God, family, and country. On your radio, we reject revolution. We stand for peaceful restoration of the greatest country on the face of the earth. Welcome to the broadcast. Look, we're not the greatest country on the earth because we're better than anybody else. We're the greatest country on the earth because we've found the prescription for solutions and success via the checks and balances. We've created an interesting experiment that the founding fathers put in place, and it's proven successful. When we literally create checks and balances and ratchet down government so they're not too powerful, we make sure one person or one group doesn't have too much power, it's a blessing for all of us. So we're not telling you we're better than anybody else's people. We're just telling you that the system of government that we have is a blessing and a half, is the solution. We ought to be a light on a hill, a beacon, so that other nations can embrace the same principles, the same economic engine, the same solutions for success. And that ought to be one of our greatest exports, our way of life, our constitution, our limited proper role of government. Just saying. All right, Patrick Simmons, National Right to Work Legal Defense Foundation, righttowork.org. Welcome back, Patrick.
Thanks, Sam. Good morning.
What do you think of the things we talk about on the radio and the focus we have? It's different than anybody else you're on with, isn't it?
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, it sort of takes a step back from the day-to-day politics of it and gets to the more fundamental issues of, government power versus individual freedom and coercion versus voluntary arrangements. And that's why, Right to Work, I think, fits right in there because it's about respecting individual rights as opposed to the government imposing its will on individuals against their wishes.
And it's interesting. A lot of people want a revolution, want of this, want of that. They always want seek for some new solution that they think is going to work. And all we want to do is return to what's already proven over the last couple of hundred years to work, sir.
Yeah, that's right. And, it's a simple issue for us. It's, we talk about right to work and unions and the role of unions and our belief, and it's widely, there's a lot of support for it when you get down to it, although a lot of people, they kind of look at the top-line politics instead of the underlying fundamental issues. But what we want is people to be able to join a union, associate with a union, if that's what they want, but not be forced to do so. And that seems like such a simple proposition, and that's one of the things that America was built on. I mean, you look at, Tocqueville talked about the voluntary associations of America and how this is these sort of civil institutions outside of government and whether it's the Rotary Club or all the different groups that people join, not because the government tells them they have to, but because they think they better their lives. And we think unions should be like that instead of a government entity that people are forced into against their will.
Wow. Just imagine an idea like that, ladies and gentlemen. What a blessing that is, huh? And see, we're not interested in taking away people's rights to join unions. That's where people kind of get us wrong a lot of times. Okay, we're not interested in taking away any of your rights. If you want to join a union and you believe that it serves your needs, we're all about saying, that's fine. What we're not fine is the forced agenda here. That's what we're not fine with. Well, the reason I bring all this up, like I just did, Patrick, is because on your website you talk about testimony. Current labor law promotes, quote, forced unionism and is antithetical to free speech and the American values of free speech and free association. What, there was testimony in D.C.?
Yeah, this was...
Now, by the way, this is really cool, and no one's talking about this, huh?
Yeah, not too much. I mean, so this was a hearing. This was put on by the new Democratic House. So at one of their subcommittees, I think it's Education and Labor Subcommittee, they wanted to do a hearing about labor law reform. Now, they have their idea of labor law reform is, of course, pushing more workers, giving unions more power so that more workers are forced into the
union. Wait a minute. More force, less choice?
Yeah, who would have thought? But the Republicans get to select one witness. It's sort of from the minority party. And they asked one of the National Right to Work Foundation staff attorneys, who has for 30 years only represented workers in cases litigating in defense of their individual rights. So workers who oftentimes they say, hey, I don't want to be part of this union, but it's been forced on me, or I'm being forced to pay for union politics against my will. So these kinds of cases. And so we gave a different proposition of the types of labor reform that that Congress ought to adopt. I don't expect this particular House and this particular committee to do it. I made the point that unions ought to be private institutions. They should be voluntary. And no worker, no individual in America should be forced to subsidize a private organization as a condition of working. And that's what the law, federal law, currently says. And it's a big problem. And so our view is, of course, for the voluntary unionism, the idea that workers want to get together, join together, that's fine. But the workers who don't want to be part of the union, maybe they don't like that particular union, they prefer another one. Or maybe they just think they don't want any union at all, that they'd be better off representing themselves. They should also be free to do so.
And let's be very clear. People don't just have – this is not a decision where you're either for or against. Okay, that's kind of the misconception here a little bit. I might today believe in a union, and I might join one because I think it benefits me and makes sense for me to have representation. And then I might find later that they're promoting pro-death abortion, or they're promoting gay and lesbian agenda, or who knows what it is. I don't want to get derailed into the examples. Or maybe I just feel like I don't like the guy at the top, or whatever reason I have. And I might decide I liked the union yesterday and I wanted to be part of it, but today I don't. Or vice versa. I might say I didn't like the unions, but you know what? I didn't realize they're doing a better job than I thought they were. And so this is not just I'm a for or against or whatever. People change their minds, and people sometimes are for them. And this is one of the great ways to keep free association unions on target, to make sure they're doing the will of those who they represent. And so I want to be very clear. This isn't just a I love or I hate unions discussion. This is an agency discussion, to choose as you will, and a free association discussion. And your views and your thoughts may change from time to time based on the landscape you find yourself in, or I find myself in, Patrick. This is something people need to clearly understand. We're not against unions. We are against forcing anybody to do things. We are also against this idea that you can't change your mind or choose what you want at the time, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's one of the things that our staff attorney testified about. I mean, he talks about the need for a lot of reforms. And, of course, one of the major reforms Congress could take is the National Right to Work Act, which would just repeal the parts of federal law that give unions the power to force workers to pay dues or be fired. And when we talk about the National Right to Work Act, I mean, the first and foremost, the single biggest reason for why it's necessary is individual rights of workers, giving workers the choice they deserve and that our freedom of association says they should have. But then beyond that, there's other points. I mean, there's economic points, the fact that, we know that the states with right to work laws create more jobs because you don't have unions sort of serving their own interests instead of the interests of workers. And then on top of that, the fact that right to work and voluntary dues let workers hold unions accountable. So if the goal of the union is to do the wishes of the rank and file workers, then right to work is going to make them better at it because they need to. It's sink or swim. It's earn those dues and convince the people that it's worth their money to pay them, or don't and lose that money. It's not hard to see why if you were forced to shop at a particular grocery store, they don't really have any incentive to make sure that you're getting a service and a good value for when you do it. But when you have choice and you get to survey the options and see all the different things you can do and decide what's really the best use of your hard-earned income, suddenly people are going to try and attract your business and give you a service that you think gives you good value. And so voluntary unions do that. Forced unions don't.
Well, and what's interesting about this discussion is I think that if people get the true news on this, not the fake news, if they really understand what we're talking about. For example, do you live in a right-to-work state? People are like, well, what the heck's that? Well, do you have free association? Even the people that are Democrats and liberals on the ground level would say, well, of course I believe in free association. What are you thinking? And when people say, do you believe in free speech or free association? Everybody will be like, oh, absolutely. Then they might turn around and say, well, hey, you know, what about unions? And everybody would be like, oh, unions are awesome. I mean, my gosh, my brother-in-law, he'd be starving if he didn't have a whatever union. And man, it's been just a blessing to him and his family. All those things are true. The problem is what's being left out is this forced agenda. This idea that the union leadership is not advocating for what the person on the ground believes or thinks they are. And this is where the mainstream press is negligent in telling the tale. First off, it's not agency and choice and free association of free speech. It's forced. Okay? And that's, you know, this testimony that was given on Capitol Hill to these Democrats was so critical. Current labor law promotes forced, you heard me, forced unionism, and is against or antithetical to free speech and free association. That's a message that they don't want anybody to hear. When we get back, I want Patrick Simmons to talk about that. And then I want to talk about the National Right to Work Act. What do they call this? The NRTWA? We'll talk about that and how it's progressing in Congress. Rand Paul and others pushing for it. So are we on Liberty Roundtable Live. Patrick Simmons, righttowork.org in seconds.
Now, Mr. and Mrs. Sir Galahad, what seems to be the problem?
Well, it's just not working.
She's been very unrealistic.
Really?
Ever since he rescued me from the dragon, we've been drifting apart.
That's not true.
We were supposed to live happily ever after.
Now, this isn't a fairy tale.
At first, he was gallant and chivalrous, opening doors for me, holding my chair, taking my arm.
All right, I'm not as young as I used to be.
He simply isn't the man who swept me off my feet.
Well, you're not as young as you used to be.
Mr. Sir Galahad, maybe if you started by just holding Mrs. Sir Galahad's hand when you're together.
Really?
Yes, try it.
Okay.
All right,
go on, take her hand. Careful, little oil.
Marriage. You're never too far apart when you're still holding hands. From your neighbors, the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
Now, look into each other's eyes. That's right. Raise your visor.
Oh, they're blue, dear.
Yeah.
For more tips on strengthening your marriage, visit family.mormon.org.
As you all know, Roe versus Wade has resulted in some of the most permissive abortion laws anywhere in the world. For example, in the United States, it's one of only seven countries to allow elective late-term abortions, along with China, North Korea, and others. Right now, in a number of states, the laws allow a baby to be born from his or her mother's womb in the ninth month. It is wrong. It has to change. Americans are more and more pro-life. You see that all the time. In fact, only 12% of Americans support abortion on demand at any time. Under my administration, we will always defend the very first right in the Declaration of Independence, and that is the right to life.
All right, Sam Bushman, Kurt Crosby, Patrick Simmons, righttowork.org on your radio. And the battle's on. The question is, do you live in a right-to-work state? We're talking about testimony that says, hey, you know what? Free speech and free association should apply to your right to work and your employment and everything else, to unions. Wow, these Democrats got an earful. And you know what? Part of the problem is I don't think people get to hear what's really going on. There's a disconnect that the mainstream press has been complicit in helping cover up, not highlighting. You would think they would stand up and kind of level with the people on this. But this testimony is critical. People didn't even know that it happened on Capitol Hill in a Democrat-controlled House. I mean, it was tremendous, Patrick.
Yeah, it really does shine a spotlight. It's interesting, you know, he testified. This is our foundation, one of our most veteran, most experienced foundation attorneys. And I guess it's not surprising the way these hearings work, but I think only one Democrat actually asked him a question, and it was this kind of crazy hypothetical that when he started digging into, the guy then said, all right, move along. I don't want to actually have you talk about this. But none of the rest even asked any questions, and I mean, some of the Republicans did, most of the Republicans did, but it's because they really don't want to address right to work. Right to work, it ruins their narrative, and their narrative, I think, is, and this is the union boss narrative, and unfortunately, most Democratic parties bought into this, and it is, you know, it's the workers versus the corporate or whatever. But they miss the fact that the more fundamental thing and the part that's really in law is that it's not the workers against the employers. It's the workers and the union and the tension between them, and the fact that so much of the government granted power that's given to union bosses is not power they can exercise against employers, although there is plenty of that, and that's a problem too. But it's power that they exercise against the very workers they claim to represent.
So the point is, they want you to believe that unions and workers are aligned, always. And really, it's a battle between the union and the employer on behalf of the employee. Whereas that's the false narrative being perpetrated everywhere, and the false premise. The reality is, folks, these unions have an agenda. 9 times out of 10, it's not the workers' agenda. And people don't even understand that disconnect. And they're funding it every day by force. That's the discussion, Patrick.
Yeah, that's right. And you were referencing polling earlier. Now, this is a few years old because Gallup hasn't asked this question in their annual.
Yeah, they don't want to ask the question,
poll
do they?
Anymore. But the last time they did it, they found that not only do I think it was 71% favor right to work losses versus 22 against. So, I mean, overwhelming support.
And by the way, what percent would it be if people got the whole truth on the discussion, too? It'd be through the roof.
It's a very, very simple, description of it, and obviously didn't get into the full details. But when you break it down by political identification, it's overwhelming support among the Republicans and among independents. The 77% independents said they would support right to work. But among the Democrats, it was a 2-to-1, 65% versus 30% who favored right to work. So that's where the voters are. But of course, that's not where the political officials, the elected officials are.
And by the way, they're this way even with all the propaganda against the truth on this for literally our whole lives, Patrick.
Sure. Oh, yeah, absolutely. And so, despite all that, when you give them a simple description of what right to work does, you find that voters across the board favor right to work laws. But of course, the distorting influence of forced dues and the fact that forced dues turns into political contributions and political power, and then the unions use that to buy off the support of basically one entire political party and then some parts of the other one. And that's how you get to where the National Right to Work Act gets introduced, and it's got 25 co-sponsors now. But getting to 50 is going to be a challenge. Obviously, getting enough to overcome the filibuster is an even bigger challenge.
Bottom line is this is where
the House.
This is where the inside swamp monsters are against us, because it certainly doesn't mirror our views, does it?
No, it doesn't. And Rand Paul just introduced this a little over a month ago. So they've got, let me pull it up right now. Yeah, it's up to 20 co-sponsors in the Senate, which is, we like to build support throughout the year. So that's a good number for just being introduced. The House version hasn't even been introduced yet. I think we're expecting that this month. But it's going to be a long battle. And, I think this year the National Right to Work Committee is focused on getting a vote on the National Right to Work Act. Not necessarily passing it, although we'd love to pass it. Obviously, that's the ultimate goal. And we do think that if we get it to Donald Trump's desk, he would sign it, because he told us that before his 2016 election. But, obviously with the House being where it is, it's probably not going to get there. But we know putting people on record and then telling their constituents where they are on the issue, that can ultimately make a difference and make change because, like we said, we go to back to those poll numbers. There's overwhelming support for right to work. And so if you
Amen
put people
and
you say, you got to choose, do you want to serve your union boss masters who give you a lot of money, but all that money is because they're forcing people to pay them and they're using coercive government powers? Or do you want to let workers choose and stand for freedom and freedom of association and workers having a choice whether or not they want to join and support a union? And when we make them take a vote on that, and then we tell people where they stood on that vote, that's where you can ultimately build support for the National Right to Work Act, and one day, finally, strip the parts of federal law away that that give government union or union bosses this extraordinary power.
I mentioned the media propaganda on this. Kurt found an article from the WAPO highlighting my point exactly, Kurt.
Well, that's right, Sam, and you know, it's amazing to me to see how many, well, just twists they put. But their story from the Washington Post says the right to work really means the right to work for less, and then they say why business interests have spent more than 70 years crusading for right to work laws. Well, in my opinion, they're not giving the whole story, and apparently there's, you know, like 28 states that are right-to-work states, so you'd think with all those states, there'd be a whole lot of support for this in Congress, right?
Yeah, well, that's certainly right. I mean, that's been one of the reasons. I mean, obviously, you can pass state right-to-work laws, so that's a goal of the National Right-to-Work Committee, but also we know that passing state right-to-work laws tends to get, it means you'd be more likely to get senators from that state and congressmen from that state who have constituents who've seen right to work. They know right to work doesn't destroy unions. It just makes them voluntary, and then they become more likely to support it. So it's certainly part of that. But, I mean, going back to the, you know, so-called right to work for less, I mean, that's always been the union talking point. It's not true, but they don't have anything better than that lie. I mean,
well, and if I work for less, but I don't have somebody stealing my money, isn't that okay? Maybe it's overall more.
Well, yeah, that's certainly, I mean, that's actually an interesting fact as well. I saw something recently, Alexandria or Cortez, Ocasio-Cortez.
Yeah, just do the AOC thing. You know?
Yeah, was talking about complaining about $8 or $9 croissants at the airport and saying, well, why don't these workers have minimum wage? And actually, it turns out that they make less than minimum wage only because they're forced to pay union dues. The SEIU has actually unionized most of the airport workers in New York, where she was, and their contract says the workers get paid whatever the minimum wage is. This is a contract the union negotiated that says workers just get minimum wage, whatever that minimum wage is, but then they have to force to pay dues out of it. So they actually end up getting less than minimum wage only because the union contract says so. But getting back to right to work laws and wages, you know, obviously voluntary, it shouldn't really matter. There can still be unions in right to work states, and there are plenty of unions in right to work states. They just can't force people to pay dues or be fired. But when we look at the data and we look at how much workers are making in right to work states, we actually find that they're making almost $2,000 more after you adjust for the cost of living. Because, of course, you know, being a plumber in New York City, making $50,000 a year isn't necessarily going to get you very far. But if you make the same amount, you know, in a number of other states, including right to work states, you can actually, that can be a pretty good income, and you can, you know, grow from there. So it's really a distortion if you don't take into account the cost of living, and we know that right-to-work states have a big advantage in that area as well.
Ladies and gentlemen, the point is the truth shall set you free, and true choice is the key, and free association and free speech is at stake. Patrick, thank you, sir.
Thank you, Sam.
We'll chat soon. Right2work.org doing a phenomenal job. This is Liberty Roundtable Live. Man, I'm grateful for Patrick and others. They're doing a great service to we the people. You live in a right-to-work state, huh?
Protecting your liberties. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
USA Radio News with Chris Barnes. an Alabama state lawmaker considering banning all abortions in that state. Republican Representative Terry Collins announcing yesterday that she's filing legislation that would overturn Roe v. Wade, and she wants to ban all abortions in Alabama within 2 weeks of conception. Her legislation will be filed today. If passed, it could allow for murder charges related to the killing of a fetus. Former Vice President Democrat Joe Biden facing a second accuser who claims he touched her inappropriately.
Biden has yet to say he's running for president in 2020, but House Speaker Nancy Pelosi asked about it by reporters on Capitol Hill. She says the accusations don't disqualify him.
USA's Robin Walensky, the second woman, says Biden rubbed noses with her in 2009. This is USA Radio News.
It's amazing but true. When it comes to one of America's biggest household expenditures, health care, a lot of people think they've got no choice. People are used to thinking we have to do it this way, but they don't. Yes, you have the freedom to choose an alternative with your health care. It's MediShare, and it costs way less than the alternatives. The typical family saves $500 a month, not a year, a month. And if you're single, this can save you a lot, too. And let's face it, a big reason MediShare is 400,000 people strong, it just works. They've shared over $3 billion in medical bills, so they can help share your needs, too. Joining MediShare for so many people is one of those things that makes you say, why didn't I do this before? So, yes, the time has come for something better. Look into joining MediShare and see why so many people are opting out of the old way and into the new. Why not look into this? Just call 855-90-PSALM. That's 855-90-PSALM. 855-90-PSALM.
Secretary of State Mike Pompeo speaking to an audience of military leaders at the U.S. Army's War College in Pennsylvania. USA Radio's John Clemens with the story.
Part of Mr. Pompeo's message delivered to an audience at the U.S. Army's War College in Carlisle, Pennsylvania, was about the role the military plays that is intertwined with the role around the world with U.S. diplomacy.
We can keep men and women serving in uniform all across the world safe. We can cause them to have to work a little less hard and take a little less risk, with the flip side being that we can't be successful at that without you having an enormous level of preparedness, of readiness, and leadership.
I'm John Clemens.
And some movement in the market to the upside. Taking a look now at your money, your portfolio certainly looking better on Wall Street. The Dow gaining 329 points to close at 26,258. The NASDAQ up almost 100 points, and the S&P 500 up almost 33 points. This is USA Radio News.
Promoting God, family, and country. You are listening to Liberty Roundtable Radio.
All right, back with you live, ladies and gentlemen. Sam Bushman and Kurt Crosby. Man, Patrick Simmons just does a phenomenal job. You know, we have some of the best guests on the radio. I mean, they just come solidly prepared with just topics and news the networks refuse to use, man. They're educated. I'm just saying, it is something to behold. I'm telling you, it is just shocking to me of how educated and informed and full of just fresh, delightful topics. Anyway, great job to those guys.
You know, Sam, I was looking when he was on, I was looking at some of these, you know, how President Trump's been talking about keeping the factories open there in Ohio or whatever. There's one place called, what is it called, Lordstown. And where the GM boys are planning on closing it or whatever. I was reading through a story from the Detroit News, and they were talking about how the union made all these concessions. And when you read the story, you almost think that the union's who really owns the plant. You know, like, for example, they said, next, they allowed GM to cut the number of skilled tradesmen, including electricians, pipe fitters, mechanics, and die makers. So just imagine if you're the owner of something, but these guys that you're working with, you know, your employees, they tell you, well, you're allowed to you know, have less of these
well,
guys.
Kurt, this is where fascism comes into play. You've got the unions that have special government privilege. So the union's not part of the government, but because they have codified special privilege in the law. And then you have corporations that play at the trough of these unions by force. And then the employees and the employer are both held hostage by this union in bed with government with special privileges. And what you got is a fascist extreme situation that people don't even really realize is fascist. It's kind of under cloak and dagger a little bit, because unless you connect all the dots, you don't even get it, sir.
Well, I mean, it'd be like, I've never been in a union, you know, and there's maybe some of you guys
out there, just union guys.
Well, yeah.
You're in the more perfect union, sir.
That's right. But I'm talking about union like this where, like, you know, and then they talk about the union allowed outside firms to send in contractors. I mean, you'd think they were basically the owner of the plant.
Well, they are.
Based
Kurt.
On the way.
Listen,
well, that's
by regulation and manipulation,
like
by puppet string control, they are. That's my point, is that people don't realize this is happening in America. It's like faux fascism.
Yeah, that's what I see here. And then in the end, you know, we've tracked the money that these individuals working there are forced to pay to their union, and they say that, well, you know, that's going to protect your retirement and all these different things. And yet, if they don't participate in the union, then they basically don't even have a job, you know, right? At these
that's
ones
right.
that are basically controlled by the unions.
Oftentimes, the unions create such a financial burden on the employer, the corporate side of the equation, that eventually things implode, and then they're like, well, we don't have the money for your pension because we done imploded. And then the government says, well, by golly, they're too big to fail. We better bail everybody out. Now the taxpayer's on the hook. And it just doesn't end with these shenanigans, folks.
When I read it. But anyway, I just thought it was interesting. And then going through the list of all the right-to-work states, you know, where they, I mean, you've got Alabama, Arizona, Arkansas, Florida, Georgia. I mean, you go down through this list and you think, well, that's basically the freedom states there.
Well, the more conservative state, the more likely it'll be a right-to-work state, Kurt.
Yeah, you don't find New York, you don't find California. I mean, you know, you don't find Nevada.
Illinois.
I mean, that's right. I mean, it's just Florida, Georgia, Idaho, Indiana, Iowa, Kansas, Kentucky, Louisiana, Michigan. I was surprised to find Michigan in there myself, but then it says Mississippi, Missouri, Nebraska, well, there's Nevada, and yet we've been down to Vegas and where it's like, man, you can't even touch this because the unions are in control of, I don't know.
Well, let me just explain. Just really that's surprised. Where you have a right to work, Kurt, but yet the unions have done their very best to pull the lever of government in their favor. And even though you have a right to work, they have all kinds of ways to control and manipulate and make sure that it's negated, if you will.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking, you know, the power there. Then it says North Carolina, North Dakota. I suppose there's more, you know, the level of the right to work, or in other words, the level of freedom is different in different states.
Yes, sir, that's right. Because that's what I mean by they have laws, they pull the lever to negate a lot of it, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Let me give an example.
Deals,
you have a right to work, but what if we force a card on you and you don't challenge it?
Yeah.
Then you have a right to work, but you're forced to a card. And unless somebody takes that to court, unless somebody pushes the envelope, the conflicting reality isn't locking you down, stay in place, right?
Yeah, good point. Anyway, it's interesting to me just looking through there. And
it's kind of like how in the rancher fight, you know, the Haig family fought and won. The government said, bring your checkbook, buddy. You're out of control. You're guilty of racketeering. You got to pay this family for the wrongs that you've committed, government. And then it's like you talk to the Haigs, and they're like, well, we haven't seen a penny. We won, but they're not obeying the law. They're not doing anything about it, right? I mean, it's like that, Kurt. Is kind of the example that I would put. Anyway, National Right to Work Act, doing a great job. We got to promote it and get behind it, that's for sure. All right, hey, Kurt, would you like that Whopper with or without beef, sir?
Well, I was reading about that. I was amazed. Have you tried it without beef?
Heck no. Have you lost your mind? Would you like that Whopper with or without beef is the question. It looks like Burger Sling, as Kurt likes to say, Burger King. They got a new thing out called the Impossible Whopper. And this thing is kind of crazy, if you ask my opinion. But anyways, they got a new burger that's without beef. And I guess it's like a veggie burger. Now you could say, well, Sam, those have been out forever. What are you talking about? This isn't new. Yeah, it is, because the other veggie burgers never really tasted like beef. They claim that even perfectionists, foodies, if you will, can't tell the difference between the two. And why they're pushing this, I don't know. But you got Red Robin pushing this. You got Burger Sling pushing this. This is a real agenda, Kurt, being pushed. You want to respond to this first?
Well, I thought it was maybe an April Fool's thing when I saw this. But this grist.org piece that I'm reading about it, where it says, Fernando Machado, Burger King's chief marketing officer, told the New York Times of the new Impossible Whopper that even fans who know the traditional beef Whopper inside and out, quote,
yeah, so I'm talking about
struggle
foods.
To differentiate which one is which, end quote. So I haven't tried it. They say this plant-based meat substitutes have been gaining popularity as people have become more aware and focused on the, and here's where the environmentalist parts comes in, on the environmental woes associated with standard animal-based food systems. Plus, health-conscious customers may be drawn to plant-based options because
of
their...
Now, can I stop you here?
Yeah.
They're lying, Kurt. They don't even know what the scientific repercussions will be to this fake food they've just created. And they're acting like it's the healthy choice already? They don't even know what the repercussions of eating this garbage will be. You know, in 50 years, they'll be like, oh, man, we had 50 years of eating an updated, taste-good version of pink slime, and it's really horrible for you, and it causes cancer, and it doesn't. They don't even know those things yet, Kurt. And they're already feeding it to us as the healthy option.
I can't really see what's really in it. You know, I'm trying to
There's plants in it, okay?
Yeah, so that's.
I know you want details, but what's wrong with you? I mean, are you against the environment or something? What are you, some kind of? See, that's how the discussions go. Not because that's honorable or right, but because that's how these people play. They can't handle the scrutiny of reality, Kurt.
They say it costs more.
Well, and here's my point. This is an example that I always say. If it costs more, who in their right mind would buy it? I wouldn't.
Well, some people that are going to save the earth from it.
Yeah, but wait a minute. See, that's the lie. What do you mean save the earth?
Well,
how do we know that's going to be saving the earth? Look, unless we can know what's in it, as Kurt wisely said, we don't know if it's saving the earth. We don't even know if it costs more or is more environmentally taxing to produce it.
They say one potential barrier to the Impossible Whopper success
is the increased cost.
Yeah, the price tag. The meatless burger would cost about a dollar more than its meaty namesake.
Kurt, but if it's better, why would it cost a dollar more?
Yeah.
This is what I'm talking about. Pretty soon you're going to have government subsidies of $1.50 to buy these things.
Yeah, good point.
But it's crazy.
Okay,
and we don't even know if it's better, though. They act like it's already been decided. This is better for you and for the environment and everything else. We don't know any of those things, Kurt, at this point. To know, you'd have to do what you said, to ask about it, to find out what it's made of, to find out what it takes to produce this stuff, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, right?
Yeah.
Wow.
They say there's a protein in there called leg hemoglobin. It's a protein found in plants that carries HEME, an iron-containing molecule that's essential for life. They make it possible. Anyway, a little more detail after this.
As a parent, is receiving a faith-based, character-focused education for your children difficult to find? Do you believe that godly principles should be a central component in your child's education? Imagine a school where faith and integrity are at its center, where heritage and responsibility instill character. For over 40 years, American Heritage School has been educating both hearts and minds, bringing out academic excellence. This is the school where character and embracing the providence of a living God are fundamental, where students' national test scores average near the 90th percentile. With American Heritage School's Advanced Distance Education Program, distance is no longer an issue. With an accredited LDS-oriented curriculum from kindergarten through 12th grade, your children can attend from anywhere in the world. American Heritage School will prepare your child for more than a job. It will prepare them for life. To learn more, visit American-Heritage.org. That's American-Heritage.org.
Liberty is not free. Its costs are innumerable. Without monetary funding, the valiant efforts of freedom-loving Americans become diminished or outright defeated. We present a solution, the Give Me Liberty Fund. The plan is quite simple. Invite individual Americans to contribute less than a dollar a day. These monetary funds are used to promote liberty-minded media, organizations, events, candidates, movements, and speakers. In the spirit of transparency, all expenditures are published. Patriotic business owners provide discounted products and services to Give Me Liberty Fund members. Our greatest strength is in numbers. Go to GiveMeLibertyFund.com and become part of the solution today. GiveMeLibertyFund.com. Participate in the peaceful restoration of the greatest and freest country in the world.
Begging politicians, bureaucrats, and educrats, and all do-gooders to please obey the supreme law of the land, the Constitution. This is Liberty Roundtable.
The only thing they got right in this story is the name of the thing, the Impossible Whopper. It is impossible for man to compete with God. God makes animals, therefore the meat that's good for us, etc. And now they got the Impossible Whopper, where the impossible is God trying to, man trying to replace God here and create their own meat substitute. They act like it's environmentally safe and it's great and it's healthy and it's, well, what does that mean? What's in it? How much does it cost to really produce? Well, it costs more for these burgers, but don't worry. To be a real patriot, you got to embrace the greater expense.
Save the world.
We're going to find out. It's worse for you. So in this thing is what, Kurt?
They say that according to the Impossible Foods website, the Impossible Burger is made from ingredients including, and so that means it's not limited to, but including wheat protein, coconut oil, potato protein, and something called HEME. And they say, and that last one, HEME, is the secret ingredient that makes the Impossible Burger taste so much like meat. So I was looking up, you know, this whole HEME thing, you know, trying to figure out, I mean, what that was. And one place it said, you know, kind of like the bottom line for HEME was blood. You know, the source for that. So I'm kind of...
Like hemoglobin, right?
Yeah, it says... humans have been eating HEME every day for hundreds of thousands of years. Did you know that? I mean, I didn't remember.
I know that because it's in blood, and blood comes from the meat that you eat, and, you know.
Yeah, I just didn't know that I'd been eating HEME. But anyway, so, you know, they say it's an iron-containing molecule in blood that carries oxygen.
So where do they get this blood,
buddy? It's HEME that makes your blood red and makes meat look pink and taste good.
Great. So, where do they get this blood, Kurt? Or this blood extract, if you will.
See,
what they're going to do is they're going to patent that blood extract, Kurt.
I guess.
And then prices are going to go sky high, but don't worry. It's for the world.
Yeah, they say it's a protoporphyrin.
Yeah, you go back and do a big old bunch of research.
That binds
so you can put
to
it
iron, and it's essential oxygen. It sure does sound tasty, Sam. I'm looking forward to one of those. I mean, you know.
Well, you eat it all the time.
Get me some plant-based, let's see, potato plant protein. Wouldn't
well,
I just want
question.
A potato, you know? Wheat instead of just wheat protein?
You can't patent a potato, my friend. How are they going to raise the price sky high? Now, I got a question. Is it better to have a cow running around and then growing alfalfa and feeding the cow and then the cow feeding the people? Or is it better to grow a bunch of wheat and potatoes everywhere so that you can extract all this stuff and throw away the wheat and the potatoes but use the extract for this meat, Kurt?
Well, but you forget, Sam, because what about the rancher like the Hags you were talking about, or the Bundys, that basically, you know, raise beef out on the range where it's like nothing would be normally eaten that anyway, and the cow turns that into meat, Sam. I mean, you don't even really go out and feed them. I mean, you just try to save them from mountain lions and stuff while they're making your burgers, you know?
Whoa. But the problem is, man, how are you going to be environmentally friendly and put everybody in high-rise buildings and control everybody in the control grid if you allow that to go on?
That's a great
And how are you going to patent this blood molecule so you can control all the food product? And food,
now,
you know, distribution, and absolutely ratchet everybody down to where you say, hey, you can't even have any food unless you obey and do this and that, Kurt. How are you going to do
by
that
way,
if people
Sam,
are running around on the range, buddy?
Yeah, that's true. And all that freedom out there and John Wayne-ish kind of stuff. Here's the question for you, Sam. It says, Google says, is the Impossible Burger safe to eat? And then it says, of course, they're answering it. The FDA declares meat-free Impossible Burgers safe to eat.
Okay, you know, hold on. And is that kind of like the breast cancer, you know, breast implant safety stuff we're talking about? I mean,
oh,
I could go on,
Sam,
and on
there
and
you
on
go.
With this
I
discussion.
Mean, I mean, you just have to take it if you're Food and Drug Administration.
So let me get this right. You can create fake meat with some weird blood extract. That's all cool and safe. But if somebody puts, like, salve, chickweed salve on their hand, I'll
right.
throw that sucker in the clink.
Yeah.
Hey, send Sam Giroff south foods. In prison. See, this is where these people are just out of control, folks.
They say Impossible Foods meat substitute is now, quote, generally recognized as safe, end quote, for human consumption. Those are the most salient points, they say, in the company's application, because Impossible Burgers wouldn't be what they are without soy leg hemoglobin. So, anyway,
okay,
I'm
so there you get it again.
Really
hold on. Now you're going to soy. So they get this stuff from soy, that soy has some of this in it. But then soy, isn't that credited with the gender bender agenda that's going on too? You know, you have too much soy running around, and pretty soon, you know, boys have too much estrogen and all this other debate, Kurt, and discussion.
Well, you can't save the planet.
And isn't it coincidental that all the boys want to be girls now and all the girls want to be boys? No one knows what
Good
gender
point.
They are and all. And then you go, hey, but it's safe, Kurt. And it's effective for their agenda, that's for sure. But I say it's just, I agree with them on one point. It's an Impossible Burger. Or the Impossible Whopper, the Impossible Burger. It truly is impossible to have man play God and win. Never forget that reality check on this.
I just know that if the FDA says it's good for me, man, I trust them. I mean, you know, those guys would never lie to you.
Good. Glad you got that down. And if you say different, we need to put you in education therapy, buddy, to make sure that you know the truth. You
Repeat
can't be running around
me.
With your fake news doubt. You don't even think we went to the moon, do you?
Oh, boy.
See, and they just go right on that. You're just the chief conspiracy theorist of them all. Speaking of conspiracy theorists, Kurt, Alex Jones is having a time of it, man. He's in battle in court with these people on the Sandy Hook thing. Did you see this?
You know, I think I might have seen a little
right.
bit.
Well, anyway,
that.
Alex Jones is getting beat up big time. In court, he admits that he's wrong. And in court, he admits that he's got a form of psychosis. Did you hear this?
No, I didn't.
Here's Alex Jones himself testifying in court. Ready?
And I've, you know, I myself have almost had like a form of psychosis back in the past where I basically thought everything was staged, even though I've now learned a lot of times things aren't staged. So, I think as a pundit and someone giving opinion, that, you know, my opinions have been wrong, but they were never wrong consciously to hurt people. Yes. Well, this is punditry because I wear a journalist hat, punditry hat, satire hat, just reading news, just being a news reader. I mean, I do that as well. So I do a lot of things. But when I was covering Sandy Hook, I was genuinely trying to get at the truth of it.
Now, that may be true, but he blatantly admits, Kurt, that he had a form of psychosis where he believed everything was a conspiracy. That's what he's saying now in court, Kurt.
And this is just a recent recording of his or
yeah.
whatever? Huh, cool. I didn't know about that. You'd think that, guys like CNN and stuff would be pouncing on that big time, you know.
Well, they will, only if they have a need. Like if one of our story, for let me just give you an example. If Unplanned starts to hit the news in a favorable way, then they'll trot that out or something, right? See what I mean?
Yes, that makes.
They don't really need the story yet. They'll trot it out early or late. Doesn't matter when needs be, if you will. But Alex Jones saying he has a form of psychosis, Kurt, where he believes everything is a conspiracy. I believe there's a lot of conspiracy out there, but I don't think everything's a conspiracy. And what I really want to know is this. Does he really believe that? Or is he just saying that to try to dodge the court folks?
Yeah, good point.
I don't really know.
They're trying to get him to pay big money or something for what he said? Or I mean, all of a sudden it's important if you say certain words if you're in the media? Is that what it is? This is about.
I think what it's really about is this. You can't question this stuff too hard if enough people listen to you. Okay? In other words, as long as you're like little and nobody cares about you, then whatever, they'll ignore you.
Right.
But if you start
to
make
a small company that's starting out and they tell people, hey man, this is good for your whatever, you know, they hardly get the FDA to worry about them, but then when they get bigger, then, you know, then they get the government bureaucrats all over them, right?
Yeah, and so...
Something like that, yeah.
They're calling it another loss for Alex Jones in court, the mainstream press is, and stuff like that. But what I'm saying is, and I'm not here to attack Alex. I don't know if he really has a form of psychosis where he thought everything was a conspiracy and that's the truth. I don't know if it's the truth that he just does this for political theater like he also said in court and he doesn't believe a lot of it. You know, that's what his attorney claimed on his behalf. A lot of, is coming out in this lawsuit. I don't know what he really believes and what he thinks. I don't know the guy personally. I just don't know. But I know this. This is designed to shut down any... For example, if you bring up Seth Rich, hey, they've already shut down a ton of reporters on that. You bring up Sandy Hook. You bring up World War II and the Nazis. You can't have your own opinions on any of those things or you're a nut, Kurt. You can't bring up Barack's birth certificate forgery or you're a nut. And so what they're doing is they're moving more and more and more and more just to say these discussions are off limit, off limits, and we will force it by court action. So what do you say to that, Kurt?
I mean, the power of the... courts and the judges and, you know, all that kind of stuff is pretty amazing, isn't it?
Yeah, and I'm not here to attack Alex Jones about this. I mean, if he really has a form of psychosis where he's deceived on the truth, I feel really sorry for him, and I hope he gets the help that he needs and deserves, if that's a genuine statement or belief or whatever you want to call it. On the other hand, I don't know what the truth is, man. I just don't know, right? It's hard for me to say. But Alex Jones did admit he has a form of psychosis or whatever and stuff like that. Just weird stuff, man. Alex Jones claims psychosis made him believe Sandy Hook was staged. See, I think that Sandy Hook, a lot of it is staged. And they're using the families to go after Alex Jones on this. And that's one of the things that I find interesting. They're doing the same thing. And this is what makes me kind of believe it's a pattern, Kurt. They're doing the same thing with Seth Rich. Hey, you can't speak of that. The family will go after you. And my response is, whatever happened to me having my own belief on this thing? I'm not going to attack the families, but I do have every right to not trust what I see about these stories.
So freedom of speech is, it's basically gone, right? That's what you're saying.
I wouldn't say it's completely gone, because I'm talking about it. But I would say if you push too hard, they will flat out in your face shut you down. And they'll use the family so it becomes politically against you and you can't say or think or believe what you want or you're an enemy to the family and of the family's rights. And so you got to be very careful what you say now. Free speech is in jeopardy. It's not gone, but it's being challenged and it's certainly in jeopardy. And my prayers are with Alex Jones and my prayers are with the family. We don't have to fight about this. We don't have to attack the family. We don't have to harass anybody. But we should be able to freely, openly question things that we don't believe are true. I don't trust the Sandy Hook story. I don't trust the Seth Rich narrative. And I'm not involved in psychosis thinking everything is a conspiracy. I just think there's a lot of conspiracy, and I think that we're not told the truth. The difference is I don't know where the lies are, and I'm not going to pretend I do. But anyway, there you have it. I just thought I'd bring that to your attention. Thanks for being alongside for the ride, ladies and gentlemen. A lot to cover in the news, that's for sure. All right. LibertyRoundtable.com. Please donate and support us today. Every penny would help. We declare we the people, along with the grace of the Almighty, we can and will restore our grand old republic, but you got to get involved. Make it a great day and choose the right, will you? We declare this nation shall endure. God save the Republic of the United States of America.